Welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody has enjoyed the full 2 hours focused on markets and metals. I am wrapping up this show with Mark Chandler. He writes the Mark to Market blog as well as a managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Mark usually joins me every Monday to look ahead to what is coming in terms of data and important potential stories that could drive markets. But because this week we did have that Fed meeting, we pushed this conversation off until Friday, which makes us or allows us to recap and digest more of what we heard this week. And Mark, let's start with the Fed. It was quite a dovish comment out of Powell and throughout his press conference. Instead of saying that they still want to hike rates, they said more so that the Fed is going to be patient and data dependent. We've heard that before, but it still, I think, surprised some people just how dovish Powell was. I talked about it a lot this week. I even talked about it in the last couple of segments, but I do want to get your comments. Please break down what your main takeaways were from the Fed and its new pause stance.
And I agree. I think the Fed did adopt a neutral bias. You know, in the old days of Fed watching, we understand the Fed would have a bias. And I'd say, of course, it's 4 rate hikes last year, pointing to 2 rate hikes this year. The Fed had a tightening bias. I think Powell announced a neutral bias. The rhetoric changed. But I'm still in the camp that thinks that there still is a difference between the rhetoric and the operational policy. So while the Fed talked about flexibility, it didn't change what it was doing. It's still allowing its balance sheet to roll off by about $50 billion a month. And it hasn't signaled that it's planning on cutting interest rates. In fact, its economic assessment was roughly the same. And so because of that, I'm thinking that the Federal Reserve can still be in a position towards the middle of the year to raise interest rates. The rhetoric changed. I think that I would take Powell at face value. The rhetoric changed because the circumstances changed, and that is these global cross currents seem to be strengthening. And especially when you think about where we were, the market expectations, talking about recessions and things like that, I think slowing down the Chinese economy. And we had this past couple of days, PMI surveys for January, Europe and China off to a rough start.
Now, you mentioned it there, Mark, and that is these global concerns, which really seem to have finally caught the Fed's attention. But we're already seeing some of these other central banks like the ECB, like the People's Bank of China, already turning to a much more dovish stance. It seems like those ECB rate cuts that they were, or rate hikes that they were predicting halfway through this year are already off the table. And the People's Bank of China has been freeing up more and more cash to hopefully stabilize their economy. Do you think that sucks the Fed into an even more dovish stance?
No, I think that what's going to happen is that we're going to see that the combination of cold weather here, and I don't know about you, but here in the U.S., in the East Coast, the Midwest, shockingly cold enough to interfere with commerce and businesses. And we've had the government shutdown, and we typically have a week of Q1 U.S. GDP ever since really the crisis. And so I think that we have to look past the first quarter, but some of these headwinds are going to be lifted. The government's reopened. I think we're going to get more stimulus from China. There's a lot of speculation before the weekend they could cut interest rates ahead of their Lunar New Year holiday. I think that people get a little excited about that, but maybe it's coming. Some more stimulus on that monetary front is likely to be forthcoming as they return, if not sooner. I think that the ECB has signaled that their risks are now to the downside. And typically what the central bank wants to do is they have a baseline forecast, but policy is aimed to try to minimize their risk profile. The risk assessment. So I think that we've gone. I think that that's what I think we've got to digest here is this shift from this fascination with quantitative tightening, where the balance sheet of the major industrialized countries is going to shrink. I think that phase was short-lived. And maybe it means that the global economy isn't strong enough to withstand that yet. But the decisions, I think the ECB is going to expand its balance sheet by issuing new loans, partly to replace old loans, which doesn't expand its balance sheet, but there might be some net new issuance there. but at least its balance sheet won't shrink like it was projected to do. China seems to be expanding its balance sheet. The People's Bank of China had this incredible bank recapitalization program announced last week, where that they can the banks issue to raise bank capital. They can issue these perpetual bonds, and then the people who buy these perpetual bonds, other banks, can swap those bonds, those perpetual bonds, with the bank, with the People's Bank, with the central bank itself, and get bills. And now they can do what they want with the bills, like using them for repo operations and that kind of financial transactions. This is a way for the banks to be recapitalized. Just as hundreds, literally, of companies in China reported right before the deadline, they lowered their forecast and outlook, I should say, for their earnings. And so China, I say, it's hard to read what's happening in China, the lack of transparency and visibility, but I can judge by how serious a policy response, how serious the medicine is, how serious the illness is. And so China seems to be giving officials, and including the central bank, large stimulus there. So bottom line here is I think we've gone from a quantitative tightening type of psychology. Markets realizing now central banks have been now scared back into easier approach.
So is that going to be enough, an easier monetary policy out of the ECB and the People's Bank of China trying to stimulate their economy? Do you think that's going to be enough to stabilize those both of those economies and get some better data this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we might be at the bottom end of where those economies go. I don't know if we should look for a recession, an outright contraction for a couple of quarters in Europe. They just reported a Q4 GDP, 0.2%. That's the problem. In every quarter in 2017, the Eurozone economy expanded by 0.7%. Then the first half of 2018 slowed to 0.4%. And then in the second half of the year, it slowed to 0.2%. It feels horrible. Do we have to really anticipate going below zero? I don't think so. A contraction? But I think that the worst of the slowdown is probably behind us. At the same time, I think the same thing is about China. But I think that in the U.S., we've had some the fiscal stimulus sort of extended our business cycle. And I think because of this other stimulus we'll get from overseas and the drop in oil prices, what I had thought was going to be sort of late cycle turning down in 2020, maybe we expand a little bit further. I was thinking the first rate cut in the U.S. could come in early 2020, but now I'm not so sure. Now I'm thinking that we still get some rate hikes, but sort of late in the U.S., late this year in the U.S. So beginning maybe the first one around the middle of the year, call it June or July.
Okay, so you think that there still could be a rate hike by the Fed? I'm also not completely ruling that out, even though I have been bombarded by a couple of our guests saying that there's no way they are going to be able to hike rates again anytime soon. But again, this all depends on data, and data a lot of the time is also driven by markets. What are you going to be watching closely to see if the Fed has the all clear to get back into a little bit more of a hawkish stance?
So I think that like the necessary and sufficient condition for the Fed to become less patient would be sustained gains in the rate of inflation, material measured gains in inflation. I think that's what Powell sort of hinted at. With the economy still growing above trend, not necessarily in a hurry to raise interest rates again, given these cross currents, unless he sees economic conditions change, including, he says, for him, inflation. So I think one thing that was clear, he distinguished his view from other people on the Federal Reserve. He spoke for himself when he said what he would be watching. But I suspect that others on the Fed will be watching the same thing, and that is rather than thinking about yield curve or forecasts or inflation expectations, to look at what is actual inflation doing. And if I'm right, but other people like me, it's not just my view, if the idea is that the U.S. economy was growing near capacity and the federal government, through a combination of tax cuts and spending increases, gave us a little bit of like a juice, a little bit of a buzz from that. And I think on the margins, we should be looking for some kind of inflation spinoff from that, from providing stimulus when the economy is already growing near trend. Whether that inflation is sustained is a different matter. but it does look to me like we should be, if I'm right about the economy, some more juice left in it still, that we should be expecting some rising price pressures, and the data will convince the Fed that there's still scope to raise rates. And the reason that they want to raise rates, and I think that's important, it's not simply because people make a mockery of this, but to raise rates so they can cut them later. That's part of the story, but I wouldn't put it quite that way. I think you have to enable monetary policy. When interest rates are too low, you can't really use it. As a policymaker, you want to have a lot of options. But here's why, ultimately, I think that why the Fed needs to raise interest rates a bit further. I think about the past recession. Now, the standard theory now is that recessions get killed because the central bank, the Federal Reserve, raises rates too much, too fast. But I think about the last crises we've had. The great financial crisis. Fed policy too tight? I don't think so. What about before that? We had a recession with the tech bubble. Was that because of the Fed? Because of the financial excesses around the new technology? And before that, we had a savings and loan crisis that triggered a small recession in the U.S., or facilitated a small recession in the U.S. Again, it's not because the Fed was raising rates too much, but because of financial crisis. And so I think that the Fed is particularly sensitive to that, especially on this side of the financial crisis.
Okay, that's very interesting. And you are right. It wasn't necessarily because of too tight of monetary policy from the Fed for some of those recent recessions. But just one quick comment, too, regarding inflation picking up. We've seen inflation really stuck at or below that 2% level. It really is showing no threat of running higher. What do you think could drive inflation higher? Would it be an uptake in wage growth? Because we didn't see much of that on those recent jobs numbers on Friday. Or could it even be the commodities starting to pick up to the upside?
Yeah, that's a good question. So this is how I think about the problem. Is our inflation, our like CPI baskets, are composed of two big things. Goods prices and service prices. Goods prices, because of international trade, they might tick up actually because of the tariffs and the trade tensions. But if inflation is going to go up, it's going to probably be because of the service sector. What's in the service sector? Well, there you have rents, big thing. Rents, basically shelter, food. When you strip away the food and shelter, you're looking at healthcare costs. And so I think that those kind of the service type things in the U.S. that we want to watch carefully, because that probably will drive core inflation. So remember, in the CPI basket or the personal consumption basket, there's not really a wage component there. The idea is that businesses will pass along their wage increases to their customers. In the service sector, people think that it's easier to do that because your labor costs are such a big part of your cost of providing that service. The key is something like this, I think, from the Fed's point of view. They watch core inflation because headline inflation converges to core inflation, not the other way around. And the economic model suggests that what does core inflation gravitate to? Wage growth. And so we separate from the wage growth and you look at what sector will the wage growth have the most impact on? Service sector.
Hey, very interesting comments there, Mark. And I see where you're coming from in terms of where the Fed stands right now. But it's undeniable that the rest of the world continues to struggle and the other major central banks are getting way more dovish before the Fed. So this year is going to be all about, again, central banks and now the turn from trying to be hawkish to switching back to dovish. But let's see if the Fed can get in any more rate hikes this year. Everybody, I appreciate you tuning in this weekend. Please keep in touch. Email me at any time, fleck@kereport.com. I've been getting some great emails from our listeners. I love the conversations that we get to have back and forth. And hey, everybody, have a great rest of your weekend. Same goes for you, Mark. Great chatting with you.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.